Blog Talk Radio.
Investing.
where officers ran racial profiling of police, like Operation Cold Turkey in March 1985, targeting black and brown folks. And upon the move-out in May of that year, killing 11 people, including 5 children, and destroying 61 homes. The state Philadelphia Police Department was officered 8 days before the 2020 presidential election.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet. And that was, if you didn't catch the voice, I know sometimes the audio is not up to quality as we would like, but that just happened today. We didn't have time to try to fix it up for you. But that was Colin Kaepernick giving a commentary or a thought or his feelings about freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal and why. This event took place today here in Philadelphia called Bearing Witness. It was definitely off the hook, as they say. Presenters such as Cornel West, again, Colin Kaepernick, Judge Wendell Griffin, of course, Professor Johanna Fernandez, and certainly others like Mark Lamont Hill, Lynn Washington. Again, it was powerful, to say the least. We're going to get a special report from a sister who was there and, of course, who has been involved in the Mumia, Free Mumia campaign for quite a while. Sister Gwen DeBrow is going to be joining us shortly, and she's going to kind of just, you know, for those who either – were not able to attend or to hear it because, you know, I find it so interesting. People were texting me back, you know, saying, well, I can't attend. Well, you didn't have to be able to attend physically because it was on Facebook and also on YouTube. You know, I'm telling folks, we're down at the last hour, for lack of better terminology. Mumia is due to go back to court next week. His lawyers are scheduled or should be scheduled to present what could be the last of the presentations of this type. The judge is going to rule now, and this means that she will either say that Mumia is going to be set free or a new trial, or the continuation of the sentence, which is life without parole. So the next few days are going to be very important in terms of folks putting out information. People, you know, who are into prayer, meditation, that too. Everything is applicable. Everything helps. But certainly whatever direct action. Again, sending a message, a letter, a call to the judge. We're going to give you that information tonight, as we have over the past couple of weeks. And again, It is so important that your thoughts, just your thought processes, are geared to freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal. A little later on, we're going to play a couple of excerpts from today's program, as we just did. We open up with Judge Wendell Griffin. And I'm telling you, certainly for me, and I've been following this case since the time of his conception or inception, he breaks it down in such a way that even a five-year-old could get it, and certainly connects it in such a way that there's just no reason why Mumia should not be free, based on the law, not just based on the ideas and sentiments of us who love him because of who he is and the great work he has done, but even based on the law, he should be set free. And Judge Wendell breaks that down for you. So we're going to play some excerpts from that for those who are not familiar with the point reality as to why Judge Clemens should be freeing Mumia come next week, based on the law as of 1963 on the books. So again, we're going to talk with Sister Gwen DeBrow very shortly. And family, I will also want to hear you all chime in as well as we talk more about, this of course is Women's History Month. And one of the things we want to also focus on tonight is, when it comes to our women, why are we still allowing such disrespect and disregard of our women and girls? And I mean in ways that is just unacceptable. And I can give you a few examples just to give you an idea as to how in-depth this really is. Now, next week, of course, we're going to pay tribute to Dr. Frances Cress Welsey. And with mentioning that, again, we have to ask, how much are we protecting our elders, particularly when it comes to those who are on that front line? And in this instance, I'm talking about women, with this being Women's History Month. What about Mother Rosa Parks? Do you remember when her home was invaded, where she was robbed? We have to ask ourselves, what are we really doing? I went to Queen Mother Morris going home services. And I can tell you, I was absolutely shocked and appalled. Again, we have to now begin to deal with some serious contradictions when it comes to how much do you hear the claim of loving black women, And I'm talking about from a organizational standpoint. I'm not talking about from a personal, like your mother, your sister, your wife, that too. But I'm talking about in the context of community now. Where is that really at? How organized is that? For real, for real. Well, that's a rhetorical question because I already have some answers for you, and they're not very pretty. But here's the plus side. We're going to change that very soon. So anyway, family, we're going to get into that conversation tonight as well. Next week, we're going to talk about some of the sisters who you have not probably heard of and should have. That'll be a part of our Women's History Month. Now, by the way, yesterday was Harriet Tubman Day for some of us. Harriet Tubman, Araminta's ancestral day, was yesterday. Yesterday marked 110 years of the great Moses, Araminta Harriet Ross Tubman. She made transition March the 10th, 1913. And so what MWM has done is, and we've been working on this for a while, and that is we've been working on various projects. And the building that you all have heard us talk about, and we're now getting ready to really gear up to fight for it. The weather's going to be breaking soon, and we plan to do some things at that building, as well as challenge the city now. We're getting ready to hold a community meeting so that the community can now get involved directly. That is something that needs to be done to make certain that the community is aware of the fact that Ooh, your tax dollars is going to a building that's just been sitting for 20 years vacant, owned by the city of Philadelphia. And again, there's others, but we're going to start with just a few for now. And make certain that our people understand, overstand the dynamics. Now, with that said, family, next week we're going to introduce something to you all that we, again, have been talking about, but now we're going to bring the receipts, as they say. For those who are experiencing gentrification, be it directly or indirectly, we're now going to show you that this is a 50-year plan. It actually started in the 1960s, but went into full effect by the 1970s, part of the 80s. This information is documented. We're going to prove it to you. We're going to bring you information next week that is going to be pretty, shattering. You're going to hear some of the information that was found by way of a few reports. One, you're probably familiar with the Kerner Report, but there's some others that I'm sure you're not familiar with. We're going to disclose some of that information. One of the things that the great Steve Coakley taught us was to do thorough research. Speaking of thorough, big shout out to my sister Keisha and Thorough Black Talk. They did a wonderful job last week in terms of, you know, bringing in Women's History Month. Did some clips on MWL. I never saw those clips, actually. I was really glad to see it. But Sister Keisha does incredible research. That's the point that I'm making. And so some of us are really, really committed to bringing you information that we can back up in all kinds of ways. Well, again, come next week, I'm just going to give you a name. And next week, I want you to be ready. I want you to write down something called spatial decentralization. Spatial decentralization. This is going to be very important for you to be able to have a better understanding of what has happened in our communities and how this government has intentionally taken over, broken up our communities all over the U.S. I'll spell it for you. M-P-A-T-I-A-L. D-E-C-O-N. C-E-N-T-R-A-T-I-O-N. I'm sorry, that's wrong. That's this concentration. It's centralization. C-E-N-T-R-I-Z-A-T-I-O-N. That's the correct spelling. And this is, in social sciences, is literally a practice in government and also in other areas. Business and so forth. But this is specifically geared to government operations, spatial decentralization. And when you hear how it actually operates, you're going to, when you hear it, you're going to recognize exactly what has happened in many of our communities. The intentional destruction of Black communities nationwide for the purpose of making certain that rebellions cannot be coordinated well in the urban areas. After the 1960s, the so-called rebellions, some called it riots, this government went into full effect and began to make certain that something like those kinds of things could never happen again. Now, you all just seen COVID. That was a trial run on some things, and it worked. People bought into it all across the board. But it was also a way to test how, in fact, a certain aspect of control could go into effect and people readily fall into doing it. Anyway, we're going to give you some more insight on that a little later on. But for right now, we're going to get ready to talk with our sister Gwen. She should be joining us very shortly. In the meantime, I think I see Brother Ray Ray in queue. We're going to say peace to him real quick. They had a wonderful session with Brother Mike this past week as well. Again, this is Women's History Month, so quite a few folks are, in fact, you know, gearing up and getting ready for, you know, or not gearing up, but actually are, in fact, observing Women's History Month this month. And again, to show you again the contradictions to some things, here the Million Women March, the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever in one location, and definitely etched in stone for the 20th century, we're it. We are the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever when it comes to the 20th century, period, bottom line, the first and the last. But do you know the invitations from groups, organizations, institutions, and so forth for their Women's History Month activities has been almost next to none? We're trying to figure that out. Not really, but I just want to put that on record, which I'm going to do very shortly. But anyway, I do see Sister Gwen in queue. We're going to go through her first because I know she's pregnant. Wait a minute, let me make sure I see Sister Gwen in queue. Oh, let me just check to see. That might not be her. Nope, it's not her yet. Okay, well, we'll hold on to that for a moment. At any rate, what we're going to do is that might be her. I'm going to check just to be sure because I don't want to hold her too long because I know this was a full day for her. But at any rate, we're going to come back to you, Brother Ray Ray, shortly. And what I'm saying, family, is there's a reason why MWM representatives have not been included in various conferences, different kinds of events over the past two decades. We're going to break the stuff down to you right now. It's important that we make sure that the next generations do not have to go through the kind of nonsense that our women have had to endure for quite a while. Can again show you going all the way back to the 1800s in terms of women being involved in organizations and groups and what they had to endure. And as some of that did dissipate as it went into the 1900s, even the 1950s and the 60s, our sisters were really marginalized, exploited, and also, in some instances, literally abused within some of these groups and organizations. Yes, I said it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm real clear on the overall cause of this stuff. But again, I would be remiss if I didn't at least make note that we're clear that this did happen. Anyway, let me check to see if this is Sister Gwen on this line, because she might be calling in on another line. And again, I don't want to hold her up too long. Sister Gwen, is that you on this line?
Yes.
Okay. I did take that chance because I remember you do had another number. Good, thanks. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation. Sister Flesh.
Oh, always, sis. We really appreciate you and the work that you do and the committee and all that, of course, that work to free Mumia. I mean, you know, as I mentioned earlier, this is really, really an important time period. And that's why I wanted to make sure that our listeners, because, you know, some people weren't able to tune in today. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we can provide as much information as we can on our end to at least kind of fill in, you know, some of what happened. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you. And by all means, please share with our family, you know, what your views were about today.
Well, good evening, Sister Fillet and the rest of the listening audience. Yes, I was in attendance for the program, bearing witness in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold. Anyway, we came down from New York. There were about, 10 of us, including myself, and we're just getting back from New York, from Philly. Oh, geez, I think we got back around 8 o'clock, but the house, the program was marvelous, and for those who did not catch it, you can go to YouTube and just look on our YouTube page, Mumia Campaign, and it's right there. It doesn't start right away because there was some technical difficulties, so it's about, you might have like a half hour wait, but you can speed it up, you know, there's a way of speeding it up where you could avoid all of that. But nonetheless, the program was marvelous. It really, really was. They gave footage of Desmond Tutu talking about Mumia and why he should go free. They played some of the music, a song that the children from Elaine, Arkansas, sang on behalf of Mamiya, singing, "I'm this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine," which is describes exactly who Mamiya is. You know, he is a ray of light, and it shines constantly. He even called in the middle of the program, just as we were watching the Pedro Polakoff scene that illuminate why Mamiya is clearly innocent. He called during that period, and he sounded good. He sounded good, clear as ever, day and working, you know, I'm told he's working on a book and he's working on his PhD. He sounded healthy, strong, but he needs to come out. He needs to come out.
Yeah.
He's done 42 years in, you know, maximum security prison. They're almost 30 years on death row. And this man has so much love in his heart, juxtaposed to the people who are trying to kill this man. They want this is what we got here. They have an innocent man in prison, and they very well know it. These people know Mumia did not do what he was convicted of, and the only reason why they were able to obtain that conviction was because they had people at the trial testifying fraudulently. They testified, as they say, and the judge made up that phrase. A judge in New York, I believe, testifying, that's what they called it.
Yeah.
The witnesses, key witnesses in his trial lied because they were under indictment themselves. It was a prostitute, a Miss White. I forget her first name, but I believe the last name is White.
Cynthia
White. Yeah, thank you. A prostitute. And it turns out that they dismissed all her pending cases, 38 cases, where she might have spent 20 years in prison for what she, you know, for her, you know, working the streets and doing God only knows what. And the same thing for the cab driver who was never at the scene of the crime, as he says he was. He says he saw Mumia shoot the Daniel Faulkner, and it's a complete false lie. It's a lie. His cab is not even on the scene behind where he said it was. He said he was parked behind the police officer's car, and that was not the case. It was not the case. He was parked, I believe they said, on Locust Street. Anyway, so the basis of the program.
One moment, Sister Gwen. With that said, just to verify or let people know, there's evidence, family, of what the sister just said. There were photographs presented. So, again, you know, she's not just saying stuff that she heard or things
even on the internet, if you Google Pedro Polakoff photos and you can see them for yourself. The man even sent the photos to the prosecution. So he asked, first he called and said, "Do you want them?" And they never called him to say they wanted them, but he sent them anyway. So they have the evidence all along that Mumia was not, the cab driver was not where he said he was. And also, there was a fourth person at the scene. The original trial never heard that evidence that there was a fourth person at the scene. And the reason why we know there was a fourth person at the crime scene is because of the dead officer. Faulkner had a driver's license application in his front pocket. Also, his hat was found on the driver's side of Billy Cook, Mumia's twin brother's car. It was on the driver's side, which means that there was a fourth person at the scene of the crime. And what happened is his name is Kenneth Freeman. He was wearing an army jacket. He was in the military, And this man went to Wharton Business School, by the way. Later on in life, he went to Wharton Business School. But he was found dead in a parking lot with a needle in his arm, naked, during the MOVE melee. They went after him. They knew who the killer was, but they framed him here because he was talking about corruption, police violence, assaulting the black community, and framing, putting MOVE in a bad light. And the Rizzo directly fingered Mumia and said, people believe what you write, and we're going to come after you. We're going to get you. And that's what his Gestapo, his police did. They framed Mumia because they didn't want someone of his caliber speaking truth to power. That's it's the case against Mumia is a blatant fraud. Reverend Judge Wendell Griffiths was also in attendance at the program,
Lynn
Washington, who was narrating the program. Dr. Cornell West zoomed in. He was on a Skype, and he zoomed in and gave words of encouragement to the audience, describing who Mumia was and why he was framed. He talked about his visit with Mumia with Professor Cohn, who was a well-known intellectual on religion at Union Theological, and Christopher Hedges. He talked about his visit. The three of them, these giant intellectuals, and now on the left, coming to visit Mumia. I believe they visited him either for Thanksgiving or Christmas, around that time. Also, Gabriel Bryant narrated the program, and Dr. Johanna Fernandez was also on the dais. She talked about Mumia and framed it, talked about all of the fraudulent evidence, which is what I just talked about, the witnesses that testified against Mumia, who blatantly lied on the stand. And the DA, the judges, all of these people that were involved in framing Mumia, know he's not guilty. The original judge, let's not forget, said he was going to help the prosecution fry the N-word. Clearly, that alone, if you didn't even go with the evidence, he would be entitled to a new trial. Let's turn the circles around, the case around. Let's say that was a black judge who said, I'm going to help the prosecution fry the honky.
Right.
Don't you think that person that was a defendant would automatically get a new trial? Yes, he would. He would probably get a new trial, and he would be let out on his own cognizance until such trial came about. So it's what's going on is the Mumia exception, but we're going to keep on holding authorities accountable. Right now the case is in the Criminal Court of Common Pleas, and Judge Lucretia Clemens has the case. She's reviewing all of the evidence. She's reviewing the petition on Mumia's put in by Mumia's attorneys.
Right.
And she's reviewing what the prosecution is saying. And basically, you know what all the prosecution is saying? They're not saying that Mumia is, well, they're saying that Mumia is guilty, but they're also saying that because he waited too long discovery took too long, and he waited too long to present his evidence, which could not have been his fault because we weren't alerted to all of this until 2 years ago when evidence was found in the DA's office that was hidden for 30 plus years. So that is not Mumia's fault. That's the prosecution violating the law. It's called the Brady law, and the judge explained it. And you know what?
Yes.
When the judge explained it so clearly, because I got a little mixed up about Brady, and there's another law that they violated, which I'm forgetting. Right? Oh, it's a Batson claim.
Right.
And I'll explain that in a minute. But when he laid it out, I finally got what they were trying to say, what the difference is, what the violation was in the Brady Law. And the violation is this. It's simple. They hid Mumia. They hid evidence that could have exonerated Mumia. That's just plain and simple. So that's a violation. Anytime they hide evidence and don't provide the evidence that which could clear the defendant, they're in violation of the law. That's a Brady versus Maryland violation of the law, and that means Mumia could go free. He said that a number of times, and now
I understand.
And the other issue, the Batson issue, is jury tampering, stacking the jury, preventing blacks from being on Mumia's case. At the end of the day, during the original trial, there was only one black person on the case when it should have been there should have been at least three, maybe even four, but one of them was dismissed.
Not to interrupt, but it just came back to my mind because I was there. I saw it. McGill, I don't remember his first name, but the prosecutor named McGill. He literally instructed, and there's video of this as well, with him instructing as to what kind of witnesses you want to look to have, or, you know, he really was instructing people on how not to pick black folks. That's what it came down to.
Yeah, there's a tape. There is a tape that exists, and that's on the YouTube as well. I believe it's called the Castile tape. Oh, no, it's called the McMahon tape. It's the McMahon tape, jury, keeping blacks off the jury. That's on, you could probably find that on YouTube as well. But, yes, there is a tape, and Judge Castile, who was sitting on the, who actually was a DA, was an assistant DA during Mumia's fraudulent prosecution. Then he became the DA. Then he became a Supreme Court justice sitting on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that his being able to judge Mumia's case on appeal when he was also the DA during his original trial, during Mumia's original trial, was a blatant violation of the law, which is why we were able to go into court in the first place. And then Judge Leon Tucker said that Mumia is entitled to a complete review of all the appeals that were denied, which is where we're at right now. And the judge, the current judge, Clemens, supervising judge, Lucretia Clemens, could outright say Mumia deserves, Mumia's conviction can be overturned if she has the will to do it. And the law is right behind her. So all she has to do is do it. That's all she has to do it. She has that power. And since she has the power, she should just do it because Mumia has earned that right. They violated the law. He didn't violate the law. They did. For 42 years, and he's already served 42 years for something he didn't do. And it's clear, even Stevie Wonder could see that.
That's right.
This is fraudulent case. Mumia needs to come home. When he comes home, he needs to find some lawyers, some litigious lawyers, to sue the city of Philadelphia for a wrongful conviction, and he needs to get $40 million from that's the way I'm coming from. That man has served time. Let's look at it this way. They got two bites of the apple. The man that killed Daniel Faulkner is dead. So the killer, we already know who that is. So they already got their vengeance. Why is Mumia having to pay for something he didn't do? Because the state doesn't like smart black men who are able to unite and have them rally around this one person. Mumia has international support, national support, and he is Philadelphia's. He is Philadelphia's best, and they hate the fact that he's not a criminal. They hate it. They hate that fact, and they want to show. They want to show like the that we, you know, we got this nigga and he's not good. We don't care that he's innocent. It doesn't, you know, it's not our problem. It's something that's already done. It's set and done, and we don't care. But you can't keep a good man down, and a lie cannot stand. And Mumia will walk out of that prison sooner rather than later, and I truly do believe that. I believe that this judge is not going to turn her back on all of the evidence that shows that Mumia was framed. I believe that this is going to happen. I don't know, you know, exactly how she's going to do it. She may just take her time, and little by little, Mumia is going to somehow have his day in court where he's going to be able to sue them for what they did. Mm-hmm. They took his life away. Even in spite of it all, this man was able to rise, you know, to make lemonade out of lemons, writing over 3,000 commentaries, as Lynn Washington explained. He's written, commentary than he's written, you know, just about on every subject that you can imagine. And the man has written 12 books, maybe 5 of them on death row. Who, using a pen? Come on. And he was already, before he even was all of this craziness sat upon him, he was already a working journalist and several honors. So when you think about that, how does some...
Right. Speaking of that, sisters, I just want to, again, sidebar. It's really important if people also know that, and you mentioned it, but I'd like to just kind of go a little more in depth, and it is that the system was really trying to show also an example of Mumia, because as you just were getting ready to say, Mumia was in fact recognized as one of the 10 most up-and-coming people in Philadelphia. And so they just knew that they had this Negro in place. You see, because usually, see, I'm from Philly, y'all. So when I tell y'all stuff about how this thing operates, I can tell you firsthand. You either go along to get along, or they're going to try to get rid of you. And so Mumia, being one of the top journalists in Philadelphia and one of the top most upcoming people, period, in Philadelphia, as it was reported by the Philadelphia Magazine, he wasn't supposed to be writing about no gosh darn move. And this is what he was committed to doing at that time. The move situation happened in 1978. Mumia started investigating it and then reporting on it. No other journalist, no other writer would do that. Mumia not only would do that with his professional paying job, but he also would do what was known as independent media, and he would tape his own broadcasts and commentaries that he would distribute via tape, cassette tape at that time, to other outlets, media outlets, more progressive, revolutionary, or whatever. And so that information started getting circulated by way of Mumia about MOVE in particular. Even though he wrote about other issues, he was very committed to exposing the injustices that had happened with MOVE. And that's what ended up all this other stuff, with Mumia not being able to get jobs the way that he could or used to, being more or less
white-balled. Which is why he was working. As a cab driver. Yeah.
Okay, back to you. I just wanted to give that little inside, you know, kind of information because it's important that people really see how this thing got set up and why. When you're in certain professions, you're not supposed to be speaking out against certain things. You know, they just figure, listen, you're one of us now, so you're good. You're good to go. But he didn't. He broke that whole thing. He went against the grain. And again, I'm from Philly. I know for sure. You go up against the grain up in this bad boy, you better be ready to fight. Back to you, Sister Gwen.
Yes, and lest we forget, the other thing is Mumia was head of the Black Journalists Association in Philadelphia. He was awarded a major award from Columbia University's Major Armstrong Award for his stellar journalism skills. So how does someone like that overnight become a person who kills a Philadelphia police officer? It does not add up. And we know it doesn't add up. Lumia is not the type of person who would have killed a police officer, particularly when he was a working journalist. By that time, it was part-time because, as Sister Fillet has already told us, he was fired because he was talking about MOVE, which that MOVE is persona non grata in Philadelphia. At least they were.
Yes.
It's a different light now, but and MOVE, the MOVE members, most of them, all of them have gone home. The ones that they didn't let die in prison, that is. So.
No, not
at that same
of them,
token,
all of them. Yeah,
right,
all of them are out. Yeah.
Right, all of them are out. But I'm saying, and some of them, unfortunately, did not make it out, rural Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And,
still
Africa,
when they got
Philip.
Yeah.
Right, and Philip Africa and Delbert, unfortunately, died when he, not shortly after he was released. And they knew that he was, he had cancer. And the same thing for, Debbie Africa's brother, they knew he was terminal, so that, you know, they let him out. But, I mean, they could have let him out at 30 when they were 30 years in prison, but they left him in there for another 10 years. It's just political shenanigans, and Rendell is behind this. That dirty, you know, is behind this. And so also Judge Castile.
Yes.
These people are evil. These people
are evil,
and they're not playing any games. Want Mumia to die in prison, and that's not going to happen because the truth is already it's sitting us right in our faces. And anybody who knows about this case should rise up, and anytime there's going to be an event or a protest, a hearing particularly, should come and support the movement, because it could be either way. If they go after somebody like Mumia, think about it, a working journalist, they can get anybody to say anything that you did something. And
that's
it's
right.
Already come to light that there's they think that there's the National Registry for Exonerations, of which there's over 3,000 now, folks. Over 3,000 people have been exonerated, and many of these people were framed because of police corruption and judges going along with it. And corrupt prosecutors trying to make a name for themselves. And that's why Mumia is where he's at. A corrupt prosecutor wanted to make a name for himself. They wanted to go after somebody big, and Mumia was somebody big, a working journalist, a veteran Black Panther, and the federal government, the FBI, says they didn't want any messiahs, meaning any Black men that were going to rise up and organize their people. And that's who Mumia is. He's not only a journalist, but he's an organizer and a bright one at that. And anytime there's a Black man that is willing to stand up to this state, oh,
you got like you have something on your hands, and that's why Mumia is where he's at.
Right.
They're using him as an example, and to some degree, it's worked. We have, you know, unfortunately, some of our young people, we, you know, are turning on their own people, and that's why you have some of this violence, because they were able to snuff out the Black Panther Party. If the Black
yeah.
Panther Party was still in existence, I guarantee you there wouldn't be all of this crime. That's a guarantee. Anytime there's a black man that's able to speak truth to power, they either kill him or put him in jail or find some way to neutralize that black man. Look what happened
that's
to
right.
Malcolm X.
That's
look
right.
what happened to brother Dr. Martin Luther King. They killed a preacher, honey. I remember that rich man, black man, who I think his name is Smith. I can't remember the first name, but he was able to pay off the school debt for all of those brothers that went
yes.
to
uh-huh.
an all-black
yeah.
male school, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody even knew that this man existed until then. That this, you know, he was like, he's the wealthiest black man in the United States. He's a billionaire. And
yes.
this man cleared the debt of those graduates. And you would think that would be a great thing. And it was. Those people, they graduated with no debt, so they can go ahead and start their lives, perhaps buy a house and a nice car and start a family instead of having, you know, $60,000 debt for school for going to college. But a few weeks after this, all you saw different articles about how he did this, and they were gonna they were charging him with some kind of fraud or this, that, and the other. So this is what, and the only reason why I bring this man up is because it shows you how when any time a black man is able to do something for his people, they come out and figure out some way to sully his name and to make him out like some kind of criminal, like he stole the $1 billion and he's not deserving of it. But he obviously earned it, and he had a right to do with the money what he wanted to do, which was unburden these young people with college debt. And then a couple of weeks after, they started writing negative articles about him.
That's right.
So
yep.
it
That's
shows
right.
you, this shows you that anytime a black man stands up for the black people, which he has a right to do. They say we have freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, justice for all, peace, and a right to pursue happiness. But it's not justice for all. It's justice for some. Look what happened to even Bill Cosby. Now, I believe Bill Cosby is guilty as the day is long. That's my feeling. However, you see how he was able to get out of prison because of his money. He was able to find the best lawyers, and they found a way. They found some way to get him out of that situation because of his money and because he's, you know, Bill Cosby. And what happened, whatever he did do, which I believe he did it 30 years ago. It happened 30 years ago, and now you're talking about it? And you're going to pursue it? And that's because he's a rich black man. Rich black, and how dare he do what he did. But you should have, they knew what he was doing 30 years ago. They know it.
That's right. You got that right.
They knew it. So what they did is probably something he didn't do, agree with me, because at some point he wanted to buy NBC. So that's that. Wait a minute, Negro. Did you forget who you are? So I believe it was something rotten in the Kool-Aid. Maybe he was trying to do something else that they didn't like. So they pulled the card and they said, oh, wait a minute, Negro. Slow your roll. We got something for you. Here, bang. Now, all of a sudden, oh, he's accused of molesting and raping all of these women. Now, he may have did that. I believe he did do it. But my argument is, well, why are you waiting 30, 40 years to indict him? And which is why he was, well, the case was overturned. They when they made it, I believe he pled guilty to one of the cases.
Yeah.
He pled guilty to one of the places, one of the cases, and the agreement was that they were not going to prosecute him. So they violated their own law again.
Right.
They weren't supposed to prosecute, so that's how he was able to get out.
Right.
So there you go. And there again, the other reason why they came after Bill Cosby is because this man is extremely wealthy. And he could do a lot of things, a lot of good with that money and his notoriety, yet he chooses, you know, to do nothing when you really think about it. He's done some good things, you know, giving money to black colleges, and which is a good thing, because we need educated people, but we also need plumbers and contractors and electricians. We also need community centers that would keep our young people busy. I mean, I don't know that he's did that. He could do that at the very least, but he hasn't. He
and
hasn't
he's
said anything.
Not in Philly.
Right,
tell you,
and he hasn't said
Philly.
Anything about. And not that I've known, I've never heard him say anything about Mumia. And I'm sure he knows who Mumia is, and I'm sure he could do something to help Mumia, because now he's had that experience of being in prison. So why he hasn't reached out to Mumia to even visit him or say, you know, listen, what do you need, brother? He could do that. He could do that in a heartbeat. He could do that in a heartbeat. But, you know, he's had his black card, you know, his Hollywood card plucked, and I guess he doesn't want to rock the boat any further than coming after him again, because they could. But anyway, I digress on that, but Mumia is innocent. Cosby's not. Let's be real about that. However,
right.
Cosby is rich, and he was able to find, you know, lawyers to go in there and figure out a way to get me out of this situation. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court looked at it and said, "Listen, this is double jeopardy. You said that and when he settled the case, you weren't going to prosecute him. So they violated their own rules."
Yes.
In that case. And they're violating the law and the rule of fairness in Mumia's case. Clearly, day and night. There's so many constitutional violations in Mumia's case. You could spin your head. So at this point, 42 years in, he'll be turning 69, I believe, on April 24th. He's lost his mom, his sister, and now his wife. And his brother is just hanging on. His brother Keith Cook is hanging on by a thread. He's very ill himself. So let's do the right thing. And I think boots on the ground, I think that's going to help. I'm sure it's going to help. I know it's going to help.
If we
let this woman feel the pressure of her community, which she comes from, she's going to do the right thing by Mumia, just as Leon Tucker did, lest we forget. A black judge who was not bought off by the FOP, and neither was she. She was put in place by Governor Wolf. So she's not beholden to the FOP. She's beholden to the people, to the law, and to the rule of law, as they always say it. The right wing says it.
Right. And if
the rule
that
of law.
Is true, if that is true, my sister, then that means she has to rule in favor of Mumia based on, I have to keep pointing this out, family, again, this is not because of what I think or what Sister Gwen thinks. Judge Wendell Griffin, he put that thing out so clearly as to, by law, why Mumia must be freed. By law, given the fact that evidence was not provided, this is on the books. She is supposed to either release him now or at the least grant a new trial. And this is on the books.
Yeah, she can do three things. She can grant him a new trial, which would be
right,
which would mean that she would actually have to overturn the conviction, and that
right.
means he could walk out tomorrow. You know, whenever she makes it, he could walk out, and the prosecution would have to decide whether they want a new trial. She can grant him an evidentiary hearing,
right.
Or she could do the thing that we don't want her to do, which is dismiss the case, which
right.
I don't see her doing. I don't see that, because there's just too much evidence. And why she would want to do that and support the FOP and Maureen Faulkner is bizarre, because they did not put her in that spot. They didn't help elect her. So she doesn't owe them anything. She doesn't owe them a damn thing. But what she does owe her community and the law is to do the right thing. That she
right.
is beholden to. And she could do, and she should do that, because she would be in, if she didn't set Mumia free, to be honest, she would be in violation of the law herself. She would be violating the law that she is sworn to uphold. You know, they take an oath, you know.
Yep. I know.
So there you go.
Whatever that's supposed to mean. And
yeah,
sister,
exactly.
I thank you so much for sharing with us. I think we might have one question for my caller. Caller, I'm coming to you at 9498. And let's see if you have a question or comment for our sister Gwen. 9498, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of your day.
Good evening, Sister Filet. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Ray Ray.
All right. Hello, Philadelphia and the surrounding supporters of the Million Women's March in Philly. I know, you know, Philly being that, even though the law says it, all the evidence is looking at the wrongness in this case. Do you really think she's going to risk her career in doing that and overturning it?
She wouldn't be risking
Deep
her
down.
Career. She wouldn't be risking her career because she's a supervising judge. She has, you know, she's just not, you know, a regular judge. So someone over her, unless she, you know, she did something which was in violation of the law. Now, we don't, you know. Judges do all kinds of shenanigans to violate
right.
the law. I don't know what
shenanigans
what
ain't the word,
done.
But you know that Philadelphia
but,
town. That's where all that boule is created, and you know she's in the
right.
mix with that.
What I
you
do
know,
she's
know
in
the mix
is
with that, that I'm just you know
she's in the mix, but guess what? She has the law on her side. To release Mumia, she wouldn't be violating the law by doing right by Mumia, which is overturning the conviction and letting the prosecution decide whether they want to retry Mumia, because the
all
first
of them
trial,
had the law on their side.
Excuse me.
They all had the law. They all had the law on their side even before.
Well,
they
brother,
all knew it was wrong. But I'm hoping, you know, I know what you mean.
Listen, she can do what she wants to do, but if she was a smart woman, guess what? She would stand up to them and say, no, you can't have this one. If she was a smart woman and she was wanting to stand up and straighten up your back, because, listen, she has the community would be on her side. The community is not going to be on her side if she does the opposite. She She's going to look at. She's going to be looked at like a pariah. What are her children going to look at her? Mom, you know, you got the power to set this man free. They know who. I mean, she's got a husband. She's, you know, she still has to look at deal with the black community. You know.
Yeah. And,
so,
you know,
the way
yeah,
I look at
yeah.
it, the way I look at it, the at the very least she can do, she could order a new hearing, an evidentiary hearing, which is probably what I think she's going to lead, what I think she will do. I'm hoping she's going to overturn his conviction because it's time for him to come home. And the Lord
yeah,
on her side.
She's black. She's black, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
She has it. She has the law on her side. It, she wouldn't be violating their laws by saying, I'm overturning this conviction, free this, release this man, bailiff, you know, he's not going to be in court, but I order that he be released. And they would have to do it. She could do that. I'm saying she could exercise her power. It's her power, her decision. To do the right thing, because she's not beholden. The FOP did not support her campaign, and she was put in that spot through Governor Wolf. He's gone now, so she's not beholden to him. Governor Wolf is in retirement. So why does she need to hold up the Democratic Party? For what? What does she get out of it?
Oh,
does she want to become upset on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court? We don't know. That's probably not going to happen if she does decide in Mumia's case. But she could still remain in her job. They might make it uncomfortable for her. Fuck that job. On the reality, she's
yeah.
got a law degree.
That's what you say. That's what she might not say.
No, I'm saying if you know. There comes a time, you know, where you wanna get your freedom papers.
As much as I hope she got some backbone.
Yeah, that's all it would take.
She's a member.
Why does she have to? Why would she want to be beholden to the white establishment? They don't give a damn about her.
Of course, all them black folks is beholden to the white establishment.
No, they're not gonna let her go for so high anyway. They're not. I don't think there's any black people sitting on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court now. Not one.
It's just like with Attorney Maddox. You know, all them folks in there know, and don't nobody want to touch it. They know the wrongness with them taking his
yes.
license. And,
but there's more to that too.
And don't nobody want to touch it. They don't want
to.
They don't want to risk it. So I hope so.
Well, we have to say a prayer. Listen,
you have to pray.
We did
and
not.
Pass the ammunition
we have to say a prayer, and we have to be in
there.
The street. Yeah, exactly.
Got to be in the streets because prayer without ammunition means nothing. Yeah.
Yes, prayer without work, serious work, means nothing. And yeah, let's also remember that 33 people to date have been released. Exonerated in that city.
Yeah, I'm looking at that too. That finally, you know, finally they might.
So that's a lot of people.
Bending, you know, because
a lot of people,
you know, has been
significant time for something they didn't do. Man,
mm-hmm.
The thing that I think we should also pay attention to and note is that, as you mentioned earlier, Sister Gwen. All of the MOVE 9 members were, in fact, released, except for the one that was killed inside. But the point
right.
is they were all charged with the same type of alleged crime.
Right,
murder,
capital murder.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yes,
so the
yes.
point is they were all released, even though a few did die after coming out. But the point, again, is based on the charge, based on the time that they served, which was, again, 41 years, Mumia has not, you know, did a comparative analysis. Mumia meets that criteria. So
mm-hmm.
there's so many different areas here that we can say this is why you should be released. One, of course, by law. Another, you know, da-da-da. But here's the other one is, in fact,
nine people or eight people were in fact released that were charged with the same alleged, crimes, so-called alleged murder. Were released. They served and were released. So this is not something new or something that we just saying should happen. But here's the evidence that this has happened over the past 3 years in these particular cases. You see, so either way we go with this family, our brother just needs to be free. I mean, we've already pointed out the different areas as to why. And Brother Ray, best believe, I'm with you in terms of I live in Philly. I know
you're
how
from
this
Philly.
Stuff operates.
I know what's going on.
And I know Sister Gwen is like, you know, the hope is there. And the hope is there with all of us, too. But living in this rat place, in this pigsty place, shoot, I know how these folks operate. And even though it might not appear that certain people are not connected to certain other people and all that kind of stuff, shoot. Not
but
in this city. You don't know who connected to who. You don't know who owe who a favor. Even if they're not directly in that circle, somebody else that they do know is connected and blah. This is a vicious, vicious place here. So, but again, I think it the power is with the people. I believe that we and whatever we do can impress upon the judge or, you know, whatever, you know, to make this thing be the way that it needs to be. I have no faith in the system per se, none at all. We've had people who have been killed, in this system with wrongful convictions and things of that nature. So, you know, we know that, but I do agree with Sister Gwen. I think with all of the support and the love that Mumia has and have been shown, if she do have any kind of spiritual whatever in her body, you know, to me that's what's going to be like a primary. Because she does talk about her spirituality. She kind of gave that in a video that she did, that, you know, she's kind of a spiritual person or whatever. But anyway,
She knows what's out here in these streets, like you said, and the people want, you know, people want, she says in her video, certain people want quiet, but, you know, you can't have peace without justice, and she's
That's
a part
right.
of that. You
That's
can't,
right.
you know, you cannot have that. It just, the world doesn't work like that. It's a circle, and, it's just about time that Mumia comes home. It's too bad it didn't happen 20 years sooner. You know, the man is almost 70. And, you know, how much time, that they let him out. How much time is he going to... I mean, we just lost Eddie Conway. And he was innocent. They framed
him. Eddie Conway. Yeah, yeah.
We just lost Eddie Conway, so... Like, when these men get out after serving so many years in prison, you know, there's damage there. And lest we forget, you know, yeah, they're strong, but they're human beings. At the end of the day, Mumia is just, it's just a man. And he's endured, you know, more than most, you know. But if they can do that, that's the reason why I do what I do. And I suspect the reason why you do what you do, they could do this to anybody, put anybody in prison for whatever reason, you know, to have a conviction so they can, you know, become a judge or whatever the hell they aspire to be. We're expendable to them, but we have to make them pay the cost too. We really do, as black people. And we have to find our spine as well. We really do. We have to come together. You know, I just think about Colin Kaepernick, what he gave up.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I played that earlier.
Yeah, and that's in the video. That's in the program, too. Like I said, go to YouTube, just type Mumia Campaign, and look down, you'll see live bearing witness, the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It's 2 hours long, and you should go into the and check it out for yourself. You know, don't believe what I'm, if you don't want to believe me, check the information out for yourself. Look up the Pedro Polakoff photos and check out Justice on Trial, and you'll see that Mumia was framed for political reasons. I mean, because the FBI wrote in their own notes, the male, this male shows no propensity towards violence, but yet they wrote on a photo, because they were watching him, on the back of the photo that they took of him, they wrote the word dead. So.
And they also said that the male Negro made no comment. But listen, family, we're going to have to close this out. I do want to go to, we got two quick calls. I see Sister Angela is in queue. I want to bring her in. She's our next guest for a dialogue. But I don't want to miss a few people that have been waiting. I don't want to discard them. But family, you got to make it quick. Caller, you're at 3028. Your quick comment or thought, please. Your mic is open.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sister. Living on the front line. And y'all forgot
all
one
right.
thing, the most important thing. Y'all forgot one thing, the most important thing. Yes, she had to look at her husband, her children, and the community. But you know what? She had to look at the woman in the mirror. Peace and love.
Ooh, all right. Good thanks. I like that one.
You're right about
all
that,
right,
brother.
That's right. All right. Let's go to caller 3929, 3929, your comment or thought. Your mic is open.
Well, this is a quick thought of Baba Oduno, and I ditto quadruply what the brother mentioned. She has to look at herself in the mirror, and also we are to continue to press on all fronts, and especially reach out to those who have constituents of influence. Thank you for allowing me to share and listening for a while. Peace be unto each and every one of you.
Oh, thank you, Baba. Calling in from the D.C. area. Love you, Baba. Thank you. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. And, again, we've been talking with Sister Gwen DeBrow, who is not only a long time, as you can tell, Mumia supporter, fighter, but also she's actually a member of the Mumia Health Commission, and they've been doing incredible work. Along with the entire Mumia team, needless to say, and always big shout out to my big sister, Pam Africa. She's not on with us tonight, but she's always with us in spirit because I know how this movement got built. I saw it myself firsthand. And so always much love and respect to our sister, Pam Africa. All right, Sister Gwen, thank you again. I know you had a long day, and I truly, truly appreciate you taking the time to join us and fill us in. Sister Gwen, tell them one more time where they can go to see today's program. So this is why we wanted this tonight. For those of you who weren't able to catch it or didn't know what was going on or whatever, spread the word, please. It's a lot of good information in what you will hear in that 2 to 2.5 hour presentation. Sister Gwen, where can we go
again? Mumia Campaign on YouTube. That's all. And then scroll down to Live Bearing Witness, the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. So just it's right there on YouTube. Mumia Campaign, type Bearing Witness, the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, you know, live. It's right there. I just saw it myself. And it's well worth you taking the time out to listen to. So you'll be armed with the correct information, and they won't be able to try to sway you to say something different. That's why you do that.
Ashe. Yep, know the facts, family. Know the facts, know the truth. Okay, they say the truth will set you free. So, okay, let's get it. All right.
Amen.
Thank you again. And always good talking with you. Always good building with you. By the way, I'll be in New York next week. I'll be up for the UN.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll actually be inside.
Okay.
Well, listen,
all right.
I'll
well,
holler at
you.
Yeah. I'll
yes,
send it
do
to
that.
You. Maybe
do
you can
that.
Come
Maybe
through.
We can have lunch or something.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, the sister that's coming on next, is her group is one of the groups that's hosting one of the sessions that we're going to be at. Because, you know, they do this every year at the United Nations for the CSW. This is CSW 67 coming up. So we'll be up there doing some of the things there. So I'll definitely send you the information. Maybe we can connect while I'm there.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, I'll try. Thank you.
All right, my sister, thank you. All right, family, listen, we're going to move right along. I want to thank Sister Gwen DeBrow again for connecting with us, joining with us. And now we're going to get ready for our next discussion. You know, this is Women's History Month, so we have to make sure we cover those bases. And with that said, you know, there's a sister that we're going to bring on next that I've had the opportunity to have known her and worked with her during these past 5 years. You know, MWM is quite as a tech. It is an interesting kind of apparatus. I had no idea it would be what it is, but I'm glad that it is what it is because, in reality, it is the only thing of its type. Of its nature. I mean, it took me a minute to kind of grasp that, but now that I have, I've accepted it. And we're going to kind of, as they say, bring the receipts on that very soon now, particularly with the Million Woman World March coming up in October. What I didn't realize when I first started MWM is that in building a movement, certainly it takes more than just having a march and then, of course, more than just wanting to see certain things. The hard work that it entails is just unbelievable. That's why I have so much love and respect for folk that are really doing the work, because doing a certain type of work requires a level of commitment that is out of this world. And this is why, again, when you hear certain people come on our program, you best believe they doing the work, y'all, in whatever areas that they're committed to, they're really, really doing it. So with that said, we're going to go back to our live line, and we're going to talk with a sister who has so – I mean, she wears so many different hats, I can tell you that, and you're going to hear about a couple of them tonight. We're going to bring her back later on, particularly at the end of the month when we do our sessions and talk about finance. We're going to do a session on finance for our women, what we call holistic. Being in the black holistically. And so, but for now, I want to talk about, this is Women's History Month. The other day was, of course, International Women's Day. Yesterday for us was Harriet Tubman Ancestral Day, and she's one of our sister saints. But we got something coming up next week that Sister Angela Sales and the group that she belongs to is put together, and we're going to be attending. In fact, I think I have a delegation going up of at least 10 folk, y'all, that is going to be participating in next Friday's session. So let's go to our last live line again, and let's bring in Sister Angela Sales in the house. Hey, Sister Angela.
Peace, peace, peace. Greetings, Empress. Greetings, family. Free Maria. Yes, thank you for having me.
Always, always. It's always good to be talking with you, sis.
Well, I'm chiming in live.
Where you calling me
from? I'm calling in from Cleveland, Ohio. You know, I'm representing Cleveland, Believeland, because we're here. Yes, yes. Thank you for, you know, letting me come on to the program tonight, and thank you for accepting our invitation to be our special guest panelist. I want to share with the family the work that we're doing at the UNCSW. Let me give you a little background. Right now, I'm currently serving as the international host for the Global African Sheroes Union, and the reason that I'm, you know, working in this particular role with women, global African women, stems back to really way back to, you know, 1997. In 97, I was a college student at the University of Kentucky, and I got on a bus with a group of other students, black women, and we went to Philly. for the Million Woman March. And of course, we know there were more than 2 million sisters there. And that is like history and legacy, and it's always part of my story. So when Empress, when I had the honor of connecting with you at the Global African World Diaspora Conference, that was back in 2015, I want to say, we connected, and I knew, you know, learned that the 20-year anniversary reunion was happening. I just was so excited and thrilled to work with you and sit at your feet and have the opportunity to commemorate 20 years of the Million Woman March, which was, that would have been 2017. And part of, part of the you being, you know, one of my master teachers and me sitting under your tutelage for several years, it actually took me to the United Nations. And we went there together as observers for a couple of years just to navigate and see what was going on. And third year, I was invited to sit on a panel hosted partially by New Futures Foundation kind of programs. And I was bringing a presentation on financial sustainability in agribusiness for global African women. And so we're coming right back around to that this year. Simultaneously, I connected with a young sister, Kim Poole, who you know, who asked me to assist her with bringing some events to the UN for her Shiro sisterhood. And so after we did the reunion, it was kind of a pivot because I wasn't necessarily, you know, looking to be in that space in that capacity. But I agreed, and I've been working with the sisterhood, and we did some successful events there at the UN. And after that, it was just kind of an informal situation. But after we did the first event, one of our elder advisors, Dr. Beekman, who lives in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, she's been working with the UN in Geneva for, I don't know, almost probably 40, 50 years. She, you know, advised that we formalize the sisterhood. And so from that, we formed the Global African Shiro's Union, which is actually an NGO headquartered in Washington, D.C. So we will be hosting the parallel event this year in partnership with the Drema Institute. And our event is going to take place. Now, the Drema Institute, I don't know, Empress, if you're familiar with Sister Iman Drema. She was a sister we met.
Yeah, could you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
Yes, yes. So Sister Iman Drema, the founder of the Drema Institute, she's also have dedicated her life's work to working with really with Africa and with the women, not necessarily just women, but she was part of the Durban Declaration. Her and Dr. Beekman have worked on the Decade for African People. And she has a strong connections in Latin America with the Afro descendants and the Latin American region. And I attended her one of her events a couple years ago at the Nigerian House, the Nigerian Embassy in New York City, because she's based out of New York. And she did a documentary on her on the journey. She's a filmmaker, the journey of how the decade came about and about the Durban 400. I think her thing is Durban400.com. But 4 years ago, she, you know, she had been working in the UN for a lot of years with all these women. Of course, we know that when we go to the CSW, we see a lot of posters and banners and with faces of African women and girls. But when you peek behind the curtain, the folks that are running it are not African women. And so Sister Iman said, you know, she said, well, we need a space just for us. And she came up with what is called Global African Women's Day. So it's fairly new. It's about first. She initiated it 4 years ago. And so we commemorated it because it's on March 16th. It's actually during
the time of the CSW, and it's also, of course, in Women's History Month, and right behind International Women's Day. And so we are, honoring ourselves as global African women by commemorating that day. So on the 16th, we're going to be having an African Elders and Women's Intercultural Dialogue, which the Sheroes have participated in that in prior years. That is going to be a virtual event. And so we'll definitely share the link to that. Everybody is welcome to attend. We would also love to have you and have your voice on that panel discussion. And it's primarily because the sisterhood that I'm over operates in 16 regions globally. We have 4 regions here in the U.S., and it's grown to about a network of 200 women so far. But this intercultural dialogue will allow the sisters who can't get visas to get over here, because mm-hmm. that's been an mm-hmm. issue for years. For some, they always shut our sisters down. They let everybody else come, but, they shut our sisters down for the smallest reasons. And so our virtual platform will allow our sisters that are other parts of the globe to participate in the dialogue. So that's going to take place on March 16th. Yes, and then we'll have a dinner celebration that evening.
Mm-hmm.
But then our actual parallel event is on the 17th. And the theme is innovation and technology and land and food rights for African women and girls. There's over 500 parallel events of the NGO CSW. It kicked off last Monday, the 5th, and it runs through the 17th. So we're closing it out on that last day. But, this organization, we exist to protect the economic, social, and political interests and upward mobility of African women and our communities. And our mantra is protect your womb, protect your sister, protect your nation. And so that's the work that we're doing. So the program that we have lined up for CSW will feature a panel discussion, and we're addressing solutions around poverty, food insecurity, clean water and sanitation, good health and well-being for global African women and girls. And we want to explore the contributions and benefits of indigenous knowledge as it pertains to our framework. And so we're also going to have artistic and spoken word performances, but the meetup, and we'll have a State of the Global African Women address as well. So, Empress, you will be featured on that panel as we're talking about land and food rights, because my research showed me that the one thing global African women can agree on, one thing that's a unifying force for us, is our culture around food. It doesn't matter what country you're in, what city you're in. It doesn't matter if your table is, around the fire, or if you're sitting, at a two-seat table, or if you're at a long buffet. Us as African women, we feed our families, and we do it as we mourn, as we celebrate, as we laugh, we dance. We do breakfast, lunch, dinner, and midnight snacks. And so it's important that we take ownership in feeding ourselves. And I've been long been an advocate, particularly during my work with the Institution of Financial Unity, is that we need to own a part of the global food supply chain. We know all of the things that are wrong. We know that genocide is happening through the water. I mean, just here in Ohio where I live, the East Palestine, they had a train derail, and a lot of chemicals spilled out of that train into the soil. And so we have an environmental issue here, and I understand that there were several trains that have derailed. I don't know what's going on with the derailments of the trains, but, us feeding ourselves and growing our own food and creating our own sustainable systems is mandatory. And we've been talking about this for a while. So that's where we're going to be talking about. We're talking about it in the context of, you know, global African women and girls, because in developing countries, 60% of farmers are women and girls. And, you know, farming and urban gardening and agricultural gardening, you know, is making a strong comeback. And so we're at the forefront of that conversation.
Yes, yes. Oh, Sister Angela, I'm just so kind of proud of you. Not kind of, I am, because, you know, I know that you were doing something in Cleveland with the Little Africa Project that, of course, was focusing on farming and land. And now to hear you moving forward and developing, you know, throughout the diaspora, particularly in Africa. I mean, and this is what we were talking about. This is what MWM has always been about. We were never designed to just be a marsh. They wanted to kind of regulate us to that, but we were never, you know, put together or designed to do just that. And you know, hearing you, it just gives the perfect example of how true, you know, that really is. And by the way, Sister Angela, you don't know, you might not know, that we began to take over a building here in Philly. And it just so happened that that's just one of many, and there are others that do have some kind of acreage around them. And we've already connected with a brother here that has created, and I've got to share this with you when I see you, there's a product called Torpedo Pot. And there's a black man that developed this product. And so we want to get it into other cities and into other countries because it increases your capability to produce. That's the bottom line. And so we want to begin to, you know, share how you can have a very small area and yet produce massively from one or two torpedo pots. Right. So we're going to be sharing that information. But the other thing I wanted to do, a sidebar, I want to give a quick shout out to Mama Condi. I want to get with you shortly, Sister Angela, when we are able to talk one-on-one about Mama Condi. But I just want to give a shout out to her for Women's History Month. She has donated to us, Sister Angela, for our library that we're building here in Philly to start with. She's donated approximately 6,000 books. Black book. Yeah.
Whoa.
Her own personal collection. So,
wow.
You know, again, we're going to have to name a room or something at our library for Mama Condi because, you know, as always, and for 25 years, she has always supported MWM. So this, again, family, is what we're talking about, the consistency, the genuality, the authenticity of our women, of our people. We got some brothers like that too. But, you know, again, you know, we're talking with Sister Angela Sales. We're talking about the event that's coming up for next week on the 16th and the 17th. For me, it's primarily on the 17th. I'm just really kind of hearing about the 16th. But these are the kinds of things that MWM, its alumni, and our affiliates are doing. And so I just want to remind everyone, we now launched our first major, not only fundraiser, but membership drive for this Women's History Month. We're in our 25-year anniversary. We've started the 1 in a million membership drive for MWM. And all we're saying is that, Sister Angela, our sisters and brothers, because they can always get a membership for someone in their family or someone in their circle. We're saying it starts with $1. $1, y'all, 1 in a million. Now, y'all know, if folks can't come up with $1, y'all need to go back home and just put the pillow over your head and keep it there. That's what we're saying. All right, that's the campaign for now. We're running it now through the end of October when we do the Million Women World March. We are very adamant about raising our own monies first. That's our priority, self-determination, first and foremost, doing it ourselves. So sisters and brothers, $1 starting this month. Million Women March. We got different levels. We'll be more than happy to send you the information. It's ready to go. Just the form and everything is ready. You can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. or because we have a million black women rising, you can send it to that email address, and that's ambrbwrnow@gmail.com. Again, ambrbwrnow@gmail.com. Million Black Women Rising Now at gmail.com. Okay, back to Sister Anza. So, Sister Anza, what time and where are we talking about for the 17th?
Yes. Well, first, before I give that information, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Little Africa Initiative because you mentioned it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we are definitely working on that. As a matter of fact, we've had a leadership restructuring, and I've been moved into the CEO position of the Little Africa Food Cooperative.
Oh,
and so that's like fresh off the press. Thank you. Thank you. We are a cooperative, and we're opening a commercial community ghost kitchen in the Mount Pleasant community. We're focusing on food entrepreneurs as our producer owners, and so the co-op will, you know, is jointly owned, and so we have a producer owner member that will be able to utilize the kitchen for catering, you know, chefs for, and also mainly value-added producers, because we want to aggregate with our black growers to be able to make value-added products and have our own black products, you know. Empress,
That's
we've talked
right.
about some different
That's
ideas
right.
for a while, so we're actualizing that. We've been working on this co-op for years. And
yes.
the white models that exist don't really fit into our communities.
That's
so we're
right.
pioneering and blazing a whole
mm-hmm.
new model.
That's right.
And so we put
mm-hmm.
a lot of
That's
work
right.
into it, and now it's implementation mm-hmm. time. So we'll keep you abreast of that. The other exciting project that I've kicked off is Little Africa Meets Big Africa is what I'm calling it. And
mm-hmm.
it's a Sister Cities initiative where I'm just about solidify the city of Cleveland becoming a sister city with the Rungwe district in Tanzania, which is where I do a lot of my work on the continent, and I have a research and development team working there. We are building two centers of excellence, and so we can talk about that a little bit more too, because those initiatives
mm-hmm.
are under the Institution of Financial Unity. But I wanted to, you know, everything is synergizing around food, land.
Mm-hmm.
In Cleveland, we have over 40,000 vacant lots and green spaces.
We have 44, yep.
Yeah, we have a lot. And it might even be,
yeah.
That inventory, they took that inventory some years ago, so it may be more than that. And so I'm definitely in the land space. I work with the Vital Neighborhoods Working Group here under the Office of Sustainability for the City of Cleveland, and we're in talks about a community land trust. So it's going to get hot and heavy here, and it's going to be a hot summer here in 2023, because he who controls the land, you know how that goes. So
that's right. And
that's,
you know, it's interesting. It's interesting. At the end of the month, I will be doing a presentation. It's also the Republic of New Africa. They're having their annual Nation Day weekend is coming up. And for those who are not familiar with the Republic of New Africa, again, see what we do with NWM Family. We recognize people who have come before us and have, you know, really not only laid down some of the groundwork and kick some butt, but who has also inspired us. And the Republic of New Africa has been in existence for over 50 years. And what Sister Anza just said, I would be remiss if I did not say, one of their major mottos is free the land. In fact, you know, back in the day, when you greeted someone, Sister Angela, that's what they would say, free the land. You know, not, rather than hello or greeting, they would say free the land. And so I've been blessed to be connected with some of the brothers and sisters who have been members of the government of the Republic of New Africa for 50 years, including Mama Kandi, Baba Bilal, Sunni Ali. But my point is that this idea of land is so important, and here we are back again. It's like you said, sister, we're coming back around to the things that people already started. Now, those who don't know about the Republic of New Africa, y'all know that they was about taking three states in terms of making certain that land was owned by black folks in three, it might have been five, but I know at least three,
five.
Right? Right, right. And did it. I mean, they moved there and claimed the land and did things that, and still do, y'all. But the point is, with what Sister Angela's saying, we now got to bring this into the 21st century and connect it in a more global manner. And that's what we're talking about, in connection with those who have come before us. See, what MWM do is, again, we do not remove ourselves from folk who are doing it or have been doing it. Oftentimes, we don't get that kind of, you know, respect or recognition. But we're not going to do that. And so, again, we stay connected to the RNA. We stay connected to the Nation of Islam. We stay connected to a few other groups, only in the way to make certain that we recognize the work and support where we can. This is what real black folks do, y'all. All that other stuff is suspect to me. But that's a whole nother conversation. But Angela, listen.
Answer.
So I'm glad you mentioned about the Little Africa piece, because again, for next year, as part of MWM, we now have something called the Black Print Agenda 25. And the idea is that by the end of 2025, we need to be able to show some real kinds of accomplishments. And so one of the things that we're looking at doing next year is a national kind of conference that focuses on agriculture, horticulture, and other multicultural things that are applicable to us as it pertains to growing. So I definitely want to talk with you about that. I'm planning to connect our brother in Detroit, Malik, Brother Malik Akini, I believe his name is, and a few others that we've been able to be connected with over the years, to really focus on how we can collectively connect some of our campaigns, support one another, and then also purchase in bulk. That's one of the things that we've got to start doing a little more also, is purchasing in bulk in our communities. Yep.
Okay.
So thank you for you know, sharing that about Little Africa, Big Africa. I love it. I love it. Okay,
yes.
So listen, Matt, back to you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say that there's an elder here in Cleveland, a very beloved elder. Her name is Queen Fatima Chui, and she is a member of the Republic of New Africa. And
okay.
I don't know if you know her, but she, I'm interested in, you know, the day for that. I know a lot of people don't know about it, but it's a legacy organization. And so
right.
And I want to say Brother Daryl, up in Detroit, where we were visiting with him, gave me the little booklets.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
Yes. I still have those. But and Baba Malik is definitely in our Black Co-op Developers Network. As a matter of fact, the Detroit People's Food Network, their co-op, I think they broke ground. They will be opening that co-op pretty soon.
Yes.
And it's been like a decade or so that they've been working to build the co-op. And that's, you know, one of the things with our Black-led co-ops, it takes, like, it's taking an average of 10 years, 7, 8, 10, 12 years for us to get co-ops open. And so it's a long time. North Flint, Michigan, they're opening theirs as well. They're Black led, and they'll be opening on June 15th this year, North Flint, up in Flint, Michigan. So we're going to go North Flint Food Co-op, I believe, North Flint Market, so we're going to go support them. But I'll be in Detroit at the end of the month for the National Black Food and Justice Alliance annual meeting, and so we'll go visit Baba Malik. I'll definitely, you know, we can have an offline conversation. But I wanted to give the information about March 17th.
Okay.
Before we end the show, So on March 17th, the location is at the United Nations Church Center, which is really diagonally across from the UN headquarters. So if you Google, you know, United Nations Church Center, we're going to be in there on the 10th floor. And the event starts at, it's in the morning, it's 8:30 a.m., so we have a morning panel. And so we have seating for 80 folks. We're about half filled already, and we have an Eventbrite link, at least registered. You know, people will show up, see you, and part of the network. But in terms of our registration, we're about halfway filled. And so that's going to happen this next Friday, coming up, 8:30, UN Church Center, right across from the Millennial Hotel. Our special guest, Queen Mother Dr. Dolores Blakely, Dr. Philae Chianisu, who is actually a guest panelist, and our sheroes from our different regions will also be participating in the program. And so we are absolutely, and our guest speaker is Dr. Beryl Beekman. She's flying in from Europe to be a part of it. And so really, we're really excited because, and we have Mama Ade, who's an elder here in Cleveland, but we're really excited that you all are going to, who we're gathering together, because there's going to be a culmination of like 200 years worth of experience and legacy, you know, in that space of women who have dedicated their lives to the uplifting of women and girls of African descent. And that is just exciting. And so we are really looking forward to hosting this program and, you know, doing the work. We have Shiro's workshops that will be going on throughout the week. Our Heal, Glow, Grow workshops will be taking care of internal business with, you know, our policies, our infrastructures, and our strategic plans. But we will definitely be out in the community as well. And I want to, on behalf of the Global African Sheroes Union, pledge 100 memberships, MW memberships, for $1. And so I would to pledge that on behalf of the organization tonight.
Good, that's wonderful. All right. Well, I will certainly get the form out to you. And also, I want everyone to know that, you know, you will soon be really seeing some structure and other kind of things that we put together for MWM. So brothers, we always had brothers in support. But Sister Angela, we now have a new unit called the Serious Brothers. And it's spelled IUS, the Serious Brothers of MWM, in support of MWM. So we now have a brothers unit. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention our brother Daryl. You know, I'm still, you know, feeling the missing of him as one of our brothers in support. And, you know, he's always in our thoughts and certainly great appreciation for his work and, you know, just the love that he always showed us. So again, brothers, we want y'all to know, you know, we really appreciate our brothers. You know, we do not do this work without, you know, without you. You know, it'd be the sisters heading stuff up because we got to do that. But definitely there is no separation, in the big picture of things. So I just wanted to, you know, mention that. All right, my sister. Well, again, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday next week. We are going to be visiting some of the consulate people there because, you know, we're doing this World March, so we're scheduling some other meetings while we're there. But we certainly are looking forward to it. And family, again, for those who are interested, you need to register. You know, sister has asked you to do that. And so, sister, please give them that information again, Sister Angela, so that people can register.
Right. So I'll definitely send you the Eventbrite, but if you go to our Eventbrite link, it is the Global African Sheroes Union. That's probably easier to find than the title because the title is long, but it's Innovation and Technology land and food rights for African women and girls, and then we have a registration link. But I'll definitely send that to you so that you can, you know, share it on the platform.
Okay. Great.
So we look forward to it.
And the family that's going to be going with us, my delegation, you won't have to register. We'll register for you. Okay, so for our extended family that's going up with us, Baba Yao, Sister Sheila, Sister Dottie, a few others, you do not have to register. We will register you. Okay.
Awesome. And the proper address is the 777 United Nations Plaza, 10th floor. Yeah. So I'll make sure that you get all of the specifics. And thank you. I look forward to us reconnecting and moving forward.
Yes,
peace and love.
Yes, peace to you, my sister. Oh, wait a minute. Before you go, let me just check to see if there's any questions or comments for you. Let me just check to see if there is. Family, if you have a question or comment for Sister Angela, you can press one now. I see Baba Oduna is still in queue. He's one of my elders. Also, Sister Angela, let me see if he has something. He's always, you talk about helping you to grow and develop. Well, this is one of my elders. Baba Oduna, you got any questions or comments?
There is no culture without agriculture. There is no culture without agriculture. When you all were talking about, first and foremost, giving all honor to your parents, your grandparents, and even those today, Angela, Empress, and anyone else that's on this platform. There is no culture without agriculture. And I'm reminded when you were called, when some of us were in Detroit at the D-Town Farm with Jonathan, with Malik Yakini and others. And I'm a basketball player too, okay? And what does that have to do with? It's called being in shape. That's what it has to do with. But Sister Angela, there in Cleveland, I heard someone, does the Cleveland Connection belong to Bugs? That's Black Urban Growers. And it would appear that they are connected some way, because there's some other people in Cleveland that I would like to hook up. And the Bray family of mine that was out of Massillon, Ohio, but you know how you move from Massillon to Cleveland at the bottom of Lake. Always like to mention the name. How does the name Dr. Wangara Maathai with the GBM?
Yes, I'm going to talk about her at our session, Baba. We have a program or a project in honor of her. Our tree, she's our tree project.
Oh, good, good, good. And a reason why I was saying that, some of us are not talking about theory because we were actually intermittent members, financial members of the GBM. And we have to always look at, we help to teach Nkrumah in this country, a non-deep way, and we help to move Dr. Wangara Maathai and many others on our way. That is a strong suit on our part. And not only, but let me put that down. Are you in any connection with any spiritual institutions that's more of a traditional way that do things around the whole issue of women and girls and food? Because it's always character, family, land. Yes, Sister.
Baba, is that question for me?
Yes, that question is for you. You're in Cleveland. You're on the ground.
I am in Cleveland, yes. Well, I probably need a little more education. I will say that our home farm, Village Family Farm, down on Crawford Road, right in the Huff community, is a historical site here in Cleveland. And there are some other, you know, sites that have history. I need to get myself up on it a little more. In terms of, you know, just being connected to any spiritual systems that are connected to the land,
I don't really have much to contribute to that because I don't know. So I guess in that respect, I'm still a student. I will say I know about bugs, though. I attended my first conference of bugs in Atlanta this past October, and I was amazed because the attendance was heavy. It was over 500 black urban gardeners and farmers in attendance at that conference, and it was very prolific. Yeah. Brother Jim Embry, I met him there out of Kentucky,
yes.
And we just came back from D.C. We were there Tuesday and Wednesday lobbying for urban agriculture with our, you know, state Congress folk. We have an Ag Noir coalition, and we met with some of our brothers and sisters from Kentucky and also Detroit, and a sister from New Orleans who's the co-executive director of the Alliance. And so they're kind of taking the helm of putting together a supply chain, a Midwest supply chain working group. So the black dots are connecting. I'm you know, in the thick of it. I'm pretty much involved with most of the black networks in agriculture or around cooperatives. And so we're trying to cover everything, as they say, from farm to table, from seed to shelf, you know, the whole supply chain. If it's black, then, you know, we're in it. And so I got to get a little bit more versed on the spiritual aspect. So please still consider me a student, Baba.
Well, who's not a student? NWIAA, that's the National Women in Ag Association. They are out of Oklahoma. The president is Tammy Steele, even though they have a slice of, I guess they call it multicultural, right? But I deal with it because they work with urban young people in Oklahoma City. And I'm thankful that this co-op there in Cleveland is moving toward, you're doing more than here in Washington, D.C., because in D.C. there is no co-op that's on the ground by Africans and African descendants. Now, there's a co-op that's called GLUT in Mount Rainier. However, that co-op is by some other nationalities, okay? But guess what? 40% of the customers, 70% of the customers are us. D.C. is cool, but too often D.C. is vanilla with a few of the people, because if you don't work to conclude social work, have you utilized any of the structured thing of Ida B. Wells in reference to food? No, I'm not.
Well,
I'm just
you know,
see what happens.
Yeah,
is that,
well, you know that that's one of ours, Baba. But I think you're asking Sister Angela.
No, I'm talking about, see, what happens is that sometimes, though Ida is known predominantly as a journalist and a whole lot of other areas, but she came out of Holly Springs, Mississippi, to Memphis, then to Chicago, and in the 1893 Columbian Exposition. As a matter of fact, that's a 93. That's a three, right? This is a 3 year, right?
Yes. That's right.
She actually tipped around the sage Frederick Douglass when she worked to distribute 10,000 pamphlets at the Columbian Exposition that was established in Chicago in 1893, and she also communicated with people that our women must have their own food and can their own food.
That's right.
Ida B. Wells. Sometimes that get lost in the shuffle because of some of us country folks and a whole lot of us city folks, but that was a part of the situation with Ida B. Wells, and we thank Ida through her husband, Ferdinand, who happened to have been a lawyer. She has the financial backing to whatever degree from her family to be able to go to continue going on the road with her children. And so she was at the house, home economist, and she was on the road with her children as a home economist. But the NWIAA, that's the National Women in Ag Association. Professor Tamara Steele, and they've been in existence about 20 years now.
Well, you know, Saint Ida B. Wells, she's one of our sister saints. She's one of our 25 sister saints. So, yep, we definitely are going to be bringing forward, a lot of the work that she gave us to do and make certain that we bring it forward into the next generation, for now and the next generation. Sister Angela, are you still there with us?
I am, yes.
Okay, there she is. I wanted to make sure I didn't lose you. All right, Baba, thank you so much. And
okay.
Sister Angela, I will get you
culture.
In touch with...
about agriculture.
Matter of fact, that's not just a slogan. If you go to D-Town Farm in Detroit, you will see this banner, a 40-foot banner that says that at the D-Town Farm, and it's been there since 2014 of October through Bugs with others as well as Baba Malik. It's there at the D-Town Farm. And guess what? Bugs almost in his 20th year also.
Yes.
We started out
thank
in
Brooklyn.
Thank you very much. Peace.
All right. Sister Angela, I will make sure y'all connect you with Baba Oduno, because as you can tell, he's a wealth of information. He's a wealth of, believe me, I often conversate with him and am always refreshed, believe me. Go ahead, Baba.
You had me pulling some research for you just 72 hours ago.
Sure did. Yep. That's right. Yeah. And getting ready to introduce it next week, Baba.
Hey, excellent. All right. My sister in Cleveland, I love you. I appreciate you. One of my profound teachers came out of Master Powell. Honor him, the Bray family, Keys. Bray and Edna Bray, and there's a number of other people that I used to know of in Cleveland in terms of the museum of a number of years ago, and I don't want to call a whole lot of names because you miss them, but I appreciate the people in the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community League, and I'm not just talking about these contemporary people. I'm talking about the people like Mary Mason and Joseph Davis. It's something interesting how look like things have dropped off in cities, but I always give honor to the people who held up the fort until some of us came along nearly 50 years ago. Thank you for allowing me to share. Thank you, Empress.
Thank you, Bob. You're always a pleasure. All right, Stanley, one more before we close out. Caller, I think I know this. This is going to be Baton Rouge in the house, Sister Angela. I think this is our brother. Let me see. Okay, caller at 2274, your mic is open. Is this Brother Adrian? 2274. Uh-oh. Well, your mic is open, but we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you now. Greetings.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, hello.
Yes, we can,
hear you.
We can
hear you, brother.
Yes, can you hear me now, Empress?
Yes, we can hear
Empress,
you.
Empress, hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, Empress, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, my goodness. We can hear you.
Yes. Huh?
We can hear you.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Look, yeah, because I'm out and about, but I just wanted to let Sister Angela know that about the Sirius Brothers, I'm one of them. You have our full support, and Like I said last week, the feminist movement is a movement that black women shouldn't have got involved in because it destroyed the concept of family. And doing some of the things that this sister's doing is going to help bring families together, whether they're married or not, or married or single, but it's going to help us bring back together the concept of family and trying to get strategic community. So you have my full support, and I wish you all well.
Oh, thank you,
brother.
And he's calling from the Louisiana area. Thank you, brother. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. Before we do, we're going to go back to Sister Angela and get her closing comments for tonight. But before we do that, we want to again remind you, this thing coming up for Mumia this week is extremely important.
All right.
You're due to go back into court. You're due to go back into court, I believe, on Thursday or Wednesday. And at that point, a decision is going to be rendered. That's just the bottom line. It's been 90 days. The judge said at the last hearing that she would definitely render the decision the next hearing, and it would be between 60 and 90 days. And next week, we'll make it 90 days. So, again, as Sister Gwen mentioned earlier, there's three ways this can go. She can either release Mumia that day, or say that there's going to be a new trial, or send him back for life in prison without parole. So, of course, you don't even want to think about the latter one. And, of course, for his freedom is really what needs to happen now. So, again, your prayers, your thoughts, sending a message to the judge, all of these things would, of course, all help. So, listen, we're going to go back to Sister Angela and get her closing comments for tonight. And then we're going to close out. We have a special thing coming up on Tuesday. On Tuesday, there's a special thing for Mumia. If you are an artist, a poet, spoken word, or some kind of dramatic piece or song, we're doing a three-hour session, black writers, poets, spoken word artists for Mumia, on Tuesday at 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. You can sign up or you can just listen in, but you can email us at naturalmwm@aol.
There's a lot of them there.
Hold on. Let me see if it... Nope. Okay, I thought that was somebody else, but that's on your end, Sister Angela, is it? No, hold on. There we go. I got it. Okay. So, again, that'll be Tuesday. If you would like to, do your poetry or whatever, again, focusing on issues that are justice-oriented, prison, things of that nature, you can let us know. We'll sign you up. Or if you just want to listen in, by the way, Baba Abi Odun will be joining us. And we have a few other kind of well-known folks that are joining us, but everyone is invited. Again, this is our tribute to Mumia. This is our way of speaking truth to power in recognition and in support of his freedom, liberation. So again, you can email me at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or it's called the National Black Human Rights Project, and it's nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. That's our We Charge Genocide 21, one of those email addresses. Okay, let's go back to Sister Angela real quick and get her closing comments, and then we're going to be out for the night. You got it, sis.
Thank you, Empress. I just want to, let you know that I love you. I love the family. This is one of those things that once you're in, we're family forever.
That's
so,
right.
I thank you for staying 10 toes down, staying solid, all the things that you have taught me. I pay homage and give you your recognition, your respect, give you your flowers. Now, a year, and I'm looking forward to seeing you, and, it's just important that we realize now and forevermore that we are the one that we have been waiting for.
Yes,
and
yes,
so,
yes.
you know, we're here, and we're going to continue to do the work, continue to be strategic. We live in a peculiar time right now, and there's just few of us that are on the same frequency. And so it's very critical that we identify our tribe and that we work in the spirit of Ubuntu and Umoja.
All right. Indeed. All right, family. Well, again, we've been talking with Sister Angela Sales. And again, the She Rose is going to be in the house next week. Sister Angela, one more time real quick, give them how they can get more information or register. Well, you're going to send me the event link, but just give them one more time the information, location, date. And if there's an email address or any other social media piece that's available, where they can go to get that.
Absolutely. Next week, March 17th, 8:30 a.m., at 777 United Nations Plaza, the UN Church Center, 10th floor, we will be hosting our parallel event for the Commission on the Status of Women 67. We are on Eventbrite, or you can also send us an email at globalafricanwomen@gmail.com, globalafricanwomen@gmail.com, and we can see the information. We are on Facebook under She Rose Shop. We don't have a big social media presence because we're doing the work, and now I won't say we're underground, but we're grassroots, and so we need to build out our infrastructure. But we work from the grassroots and the grass tops.
That's right.
And we're looking forward to seeing you all. We want the brothers to come out and support, even though it's the Commission on the Status of Women. Invite the brothers also to come out. So, again, that's the UN Church Center, New York City. I'm in Manhattan. We'll be right there across from the United Nations headquarters. And it's going down Friday, March 17th. And we'll see you there.
All right, family. All right. Good thanks, my sister. All right, family. Listen, we're going to close this session out for New Day. Remember, come next month, we will be commemorating 14 straight years of this radio broadcast. We got some special stuff getting ready to go down. So definitely stay in tune. 14 years straight, every single week, independent. Now, you know that's some bad stuff right there. Anyway, moving right along, family, we are going to close out. We're getting ready to do something really exciting as we proceed in getting ready for the Million Woman World March. Are y'all ready for a world party, a dance party? Well, guess what? I'm going to tell you about that next week. We are going to have an international dance party. It's going to be virtual. However, I'll tell you about it next week. Till next time, remember, Pomoja to the Shenda. Together, we shall win. And you know what? We're talking about right now, winning, that is. Till next time, remember, there could be no real peace until there's justice. Because what we say, Sister Angela, if there's no justice, there's no what?
No peace.
Amen.